Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. We shall read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 7. Text 69. The background to the present section of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come to Varanasi, which is a place inhabited by many Mayavadi sannyasis. And as usual, he was chanting and dancing in ecstasy, and throngs of people were following him. The chief of the Mayavadi sannyasis was Prakashananda Saraswati, and he could not understand the transcendental activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and so he criticized the Lord for singing and dancing like low-class person and not engaging in the proper activities of a sannyasi, which in his conception was the study of Vedanta. So the Lord would stay with Tapan Mishra in Varanasi. Tapan Mishra heard about the criticism of the Lord and he was very distressed. And soon thereafter, Prakashananda Saraswati convened a meeting of all of the sannyasis in Varanasi. And naturally, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also included. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought, well, this is an opportunity. Tapan Mishra thought, this is an opportunity for the Lord to clarify the misunderstandings of the Mayavadis. So when Lord Chaitanya arrived at the assembly, he didn't join the other sannyasis, but he remained at the door, receiving all the sannyasis who came to visit. And Prakashananda Saraswati, seeing the Lord posted at the doorway, serving the lotus feet of the sannyasis who entered the assembly, came over and took him by the hand and led him to join the rest of the group. He saw the Lord's effulgence, and of course, being a Mayavadi, he is very attracted by the effulgence of the Lord. And he thought that Lord Chaitanya was sitting by the door because he was depressed and didn't feel happy to join the others. And so he came and led him by the hand to the assembly. Or in other words, he did some service to the Lord, which made him eligible to receive knowledge from the Lord. So there's, I'll just read the the verses. Leading up to the discussion, and then we'll meet the discussion. We'll start with text 60. After sitting on the ground, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his mystic power by manifesting an effulgent as brilliant as the illumination of millions of suns. When the sannyasis saw the brilliant illumination of the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds were attracted, and they all immediately gave up their sitting places and stood in respect. The leader of all the Mayavadi sannyasis present was named Prakashananda Saraswati. And after standing up, he addressed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as follows with great respect. Please come here. Please come here, Your Holiness. Why do you sit in that unclean place? What has caused your lamentation? The Lord replied, I belong to a lower order of sannyasis. Therefore, I do not deserve to sit with you. Prakashananda Saraswati, however, caught Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally by the hand and seated him with great respect in the midst of the assembly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The respectful behavior of Prakashananda Saraswati towards Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very much to be appreciated. Such behavior is calculated to be a jnata sukriti, or pious activity that one executes without his knowledge. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very tactfully gave Prakashananda Saraswati an opportunity to advance in Agyata Sukriti, so that in the future he might actually become a Vaishnava sannyasi. 66. Prakashananda Saraswati then said, I understand that your name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. You are a disciple of Sri Keshava Bharati, and therefore you are glorious. You belong to our Shankara Sampradaya and live in our village, Varanasi. Why then do you not associate with us? Why is it that you avoid even seeing us? Purport. A Vaishnav sannyasi, or a Vaishnav in the second stage of advancement in spiritual knowledge, can understand four principles. Who knows what the four principles are? A Vaishnava in the second stage. There are three stages. Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttama. And a Vaishnava in the second stage sees four principles. Yes, that's one. That's two. That's three. Yes. Prema Maitri Kripa Peksha Sakaroti Samadhyama. He gives his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He makes friendship with devotees. He shows mercy to the innocent. And he avoids the envious. A Vaishnava sannyasi, or a Vaishnava in the second stage of advancement in spiritual knowledge, can understand four principles, namely, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotees, the innocent, and the jealous. And he behaves differently with each. He tries to increase his love for Godhead, make friendship with devotees, and preach Krishna consciousness among the innocent. But he avoids the jealous who are envious of the Krishna consciousness movement. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself exemplified such behavior. And this is why Prakashananda Saraswati inquired why he did not associate or even talk with them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed by example that a preacher of the Krishna consciousness movement generally should not waste his time talking with Mayavadi sannyasis. But when there are arguments on the basis of Shastra, a Vaishnav must come forward to talk and defeat them in philosophy. Hare Krishna. There was an incident that took place during Srila Prabhupada's presence in which one of Prabhupada's disciples met a big Mayavadi professor at the University of California at Berkeley. Hare Krishna. And the professor had a similar attitude as Prakashananda Saraswati. He thought that Srila Prabhupada was basically misleading his disciples by engaging them in some sort of sentimental fanaticism. And the disciple entered into a conversation with the professor. And the professor was not satisfied with the disciple's answers. So the disciple, named Hansajuta Prabhu, referred the matter to Srila Prabhupada. He thought it's better that the professor discusses directly with Srila Prabhupada. And they had some discussion back and forth by letter. And Srila Prabhupada quoted his verses in support of his method, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. And the professor is quite a distinguished scholar in academic circles. He quoted his verses. And at the end, Srila Prabhupada said that it is like two lawyers in a court of law. Each one will quote the passages of law to support his position. But ultimately, there has to be a judge to decide. So you are quoting your statements from Shastra. I'm quoting my statements from Shastra. But we need a judge to make a decision. And Srila Prabhupada said, who do you think Srila Prabhupada suggested should be the judge? Who said Krishna? Close.
I'm just guessing. Should Prabhupada himself?
No, because he's one of the lawyers arguing the case. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so anyway, they had that discussion, and the correspondence is actually included in the Science of Self-Realization. But Srila Prabhupada commented on the side that he wanted his disciples to be competent to argue with scholars and Mayavadis like Professor Stahl. So the same point is mentioned here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed by example that a preacher of the Krishna consciousness movement generally should not waste his time talking with Mayavadi sannyasis. But when there are arguments on the basis of Shastra, a Vaishnava must come forward to talk and defeat them in philosophy. You are a sannyasi. Why then do you indulge in chanting and dancing, engaging in your Sankirtan movement in the company of fanatics? Purport. This is a challenge by Prakashananda Saraswati to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in his Anubhasya that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the object of Vedanta philosophical research, has very kindly determined who is an appropriate candidate for study of Vedanta philosophy. The first qualification of such a candidate is expressed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastika. Chinadapi sunichena tororapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. This statement indicates that one can hear or speak about Vedanta philosophy through the disciplic succession. One must be very humble and meek, more tolerant than a tree and more humble than the grass. One should not claim respect for himself, but should be prepared to give all respect to others. One must have these qualifications to be eligible to understand Vedic knowledge. This is very interesting. After quoting the verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, Srila Prabhupada says, this statement indicates that one can hear or speak about Vedanta philosophy through the disciplic succession. Now this is very intriguing, because apparently there's no mention of hearing from disciplic succession in the verse. Once a disciple said to Srila Prabhupada that Lord Chaitanya has given us the 8 verses of Shikshastika, which is the essence of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but what about mention of Guru? Guru is such a critical factor in the development of Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada in the same way quoted the same verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, that if one is humble, one will accept a spiritual master. So here too, Srila Prabhupada is suggesting if one is humble, one will receive knowledge through submissive oral reception, through disciplic succession. Text 69. Meditation and the study of Vedanta are the sole duties of a sannyasi. Why do you abandon these to dance with fanatics? Purport. As explained in regard to verse 41, Mayavadi sannyasis do not approve of chanting and dancing. Prakashananda Saraswati, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, misunderstood Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be a misled young sannyasi, and therefore asked him why he indulged in the association of fanatics instead of executing the duty of a sannyasi. Text 70. You look as brilliant as if you were Narayan himself. Will you kindly explain the reason that you have adopted the behavior of lower class people? Purport. Due to renunciation, Vedanta study, meditation, and the strict regulative principles of their daily routine, Mayavadi sannyasis are certainly in a position to execute pious activities. Thus, Prakashananda Saraswati, on account of his piety, could understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not an ordinary person, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sakshat Narayana. He considered him to be Narayana himself. Mayavadi sannyasis address each other as Narayana, because they think they are all going to be Narayana or merge with Narayana in the next life. Prakashananda Saraswati appreciated that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already directly become Narayana and did not need to wait until his next life. One difference between the Vaishnav and Mayavadi philosophies is that the Mayavadi philosophers think that after giving up their bodies, they are going to become Narayan by merging with his body. Whereas Vaishnav philosophers understand that after the body dies, they are going to have a transcendental spiritual body in which to associate with Narayan. These descriptions are accurate. Of course, we accept them on faith as good devotees, but they are accurate. I remember once I visited a wealthy, pious Marwari businessman in New Delhi. And as I was getting in the car to leave, some pundit or Mayavadi sannyasi approached to me, and he was going, Om Namo Narayana. Om Namo Narayana. That's what they do. That's what they think. Prabhu kahe shuna shri parihara karana Guru more mukade ki karilas shasana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Prakashananda Saraswati, My dear sir, kindly hear the reason. My spiritual master considered me a fool, and therefore he chastised me. purport. When Prakashananda Saraswati inquired from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu why he neither studied Vedanta nor performed meditation, Lord Chaitanya presented himself as a number one fool in order to indicate that the present age, Kali Yuga, is an age of fools and rascals, in which it is not possible to obtain perfection simply by reading Vedanta philosophy and meditating. The Shastras strongly recommend Harinama, 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 Vakevalam, Kalona, Stevana, Stevana, Steva, Gatir, Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. People in general in Kali Yuga are so fallen that it is not possible for them to obtain perfection simply by studying Vedanta Sutra. One should therefore seriously take to the constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Murka tumi tomara naika vedantikara Krishna mantra japasada e mantra sara. You are a fool, he said. You are not qualified to study Vedanta philosophy, and therefore you must always chant the holy name of Krishna. This is the essence of all mantras or Vedic hymns. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj comments in this connection. One can become perfectly successful in the mission of his life if he acts exactly according to the words he hears from the mouth of his spiritual master. This acceptance of the words of the spiritual master is called Shrotavakya, which indicates that the disciple must carry out the spiritual master's instructions without deviation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that a disciple must accept the words of his spiritual master as his life and soul. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here confirms this by saying that since his spiritual master ordered him only to chant the holy name of Krishna, he always chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra according to this direction. Krishna Mantra Japa Sada, A Mantra Sar. So this is the essence of Srila Prabhupada's mood in devotional service, to follow strictly the specific instructions that one has received from one spiritual master. And it was on the basis of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instruction that he came to the West and was able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He had that dual conviction faith in the order of the spiritual master, and faith in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And on the basis of his implicit faith in both the order of his spiritual master and the efficacy of chanting Hare Krishna, he executed the order and was successful. Whereas none of his other god brothers who were sannyasis, Srila Prabhupada later did accept sannyas, but during his Guru Maharaj's presence he was a householder. And they were learned in Shastra and qualified in so many ways. But Srila Prabhupada, and it was openly known that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted Krishna consciousness spread in the Western countries. He sent disciples to England. He wanted very much that Krishna consciousness be spread in Europe and America and everywhere. But no one could really do it except Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada himself raised the question, how has this wonderful thing happened to me? I was not a learned scholar, I was not a sannyasi, I did not have so much association with my Guru Maharaj. How did this wonderful thing happen to me? And then he gave the answer, because I had implicit faith in the orders of my spiritual master. Krishna is the origin of everything. Therefore, when a person is fully Krishna conscious, it is to be understood that his relationship with Krishna has been fully confirmed. Lacking Krishna consciousness, one is only partially related with Krishna, and is therefore not in his constitutional position. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the spiritual master of the entire universe, he nevertheless took the position of a disciple in order to teach by example how a devotee should strictly follow the orders of a spiritual master in executing the duty of always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So it is a given that one should always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Kirtaniya Sada Hari. And Lord Krishna has said the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita, Satatam Kirtayanto Mam. So it is understood that one must constantly chant the holy name. And here Srila Prabhupada is elaborating that in the process of always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one should strictly follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the spiritual master of the entire universe, he nevertheless took the position of a disciple in order to teach by example how a devotee should strictly follow the orders of a spiritual master in executing the duty of always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. One who is very much attracted to the study of Vedanta philosophy must take lessons from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this age, no one is actually competent to study Vedanta. And therefore, it is better that one chant the holy name of the Lord, which is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, as Krishna himself confirms in the Bhagavad Gita. Vaidaishta sarvair aham eva vedyo vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. By all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So the purpose of all Vedic philosophy is to realize Krishna, and Krishna is non-different from his holy name, and therefore the goal of all Vedic study and processes is achieved by chanting Hare Krishna. Only fools give up the service of the spiritual master and think themselves advanced in spiritual knowledge. Once a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, is it possible that one of his disciples could have a difference of opinion with him? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, that is not possible. But the interviewer persisted, but no, what if a disciple had a difference of opinion with you on some matter? What would you say? Prabhupada replied, I would say he's a fool. And Prabhupada says the same thing here. Only fools give up the service of the spiritual master and think themselves advanced in spiritual knowledge. In order to check such fools, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself presented the perfect example of how to be a disciple. A spiritual master knows very well how to engage each disciple in a particular duty. But if a disciple, thinking himself more advanced than his spiritual master, gives up his orders and acts independently, he checks his own spiritual progress. Every disciple must consider himself completely unaware of the science of Krishna and must always be ready to carry out the orders of the spiritual master to become competent in Krishna consciousness. A disciple should always remain a fool before his spiritual master. Therefore, sometimes pseudo-spiritualists accept a spiritual master who is not even fit to become a disciple, because they want to keep him under their control. This is useless for spiritual realization. One who imperfectly knows Krishna consciousness cannot know Vedanta philosophy. A showy display of Vedanta study without Krishna consciousness is a feature of the external energy, Maya, And as long as one is attracted by the inebrieties of this ever-changing material energy, he deviates from devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I think we'll end here. It's a very interesting section of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I also wanted to discuss some of the subsequent verses and purports, but we may have to wait until the next Sunday I'm here, which will be after Gaur Purnima. And maybe we can discuss them then. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments?
I have a question about the presentation of the My Bodies and Atheists that comes up, that basically in their philosophy they mention that the phenomena, I'm just going to read some of it, says that in Sankhya philosophy, the atheistic Sankhya philosophy.
What are you reading from?
This is Krishna book, Prayers of the Personified Deity. So it says here, the conclusion of the atheistic Sankhya philosophy is that because the effects, the phenomena of this material world are temporary or illusory, the cause is also illusory. And I had a conversation here in the temple last week with a college professor, and he was saying to me that I gave him the example that just like when you go into the sun in the summertime, the sun's rays are warm. So you naturally conclude that the sun, the planet, is hot. So the same way, we're all people, and so therefore our source, our origin, must also have personality. I gave this example. And he gave me an example. He said, but what about the example of an apple tree? The tree is different than an apple. And yet the apple comes from a tree. So in that, when I was reading into these arguments, I found this here. What the basic premise is that because the material world is temporary and illusory, its origin must also be illusory. So I was wondering, what your rebuttal to that in a conversational format, because this is coming out with atheistic materialistic people, they bring up these arguments.
Well, the absolute truth is by definition the origin of everything. And therefore, everything that exists also exists in the absolute truth. So, we agree that there's an impersonal feature to the absolute truth, but there's also a personal feature. Similarly, there is the absolute truth has eternal energies. It's not exactly that the material energy is temporary, but the products of the material energy are temporary in their particular forms. So, God must include everything that's in our experience. So, he includes person and imperson. He includes eternal and temporary. But if you say he's only impersonal and not personal, you're limiting him. You're you're excluding something from the origin, which is in the creation. There can't be more in the creation than in the origin. So yes, it's true that the Lord has creates temporary things, but he also manifests eternal things. So everything is included in him. And we are given the choice. We can choose the impersonal feature or the personal feature. We can choose the illusory temporary manifestations or the eternal blissful manifestations. That is our choice. But everything exists in him, and yayatam mam prapadyante, as we approach him, he reciprocates. If we want a loving relationship with him, he's ready. If we want to merge into his impersonal effulgent, he's ready. If we want to try to enjoy the illusory forms of the material world, he gives us that facility as well.
Thank you very much.
One of the four points you read to Prakashanam Saraswati, you said that Lord Chaitanya was part of the Sankara school is initiated.
Yes.
Can you explain how that?
Yes. The rule is that one must accept sannyas from someone who's a sannyasi. Now, there is no reason for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept sannyas at all. But the reason he decided to accept sannyas is because people were misunderstanding him and blaspheming him and offending him. So he thought in Vedic culture, people respect sannyasis. So if I take sannyas, then people will respect me, which will make it possible for them to make further advancement. And if they disrespect me, blaspheme me, commit offenses, they will not be able to be elevated. Rather, they will be degraded. Now, although there's Vaishnava sannyas and Mayavad sannyas, at the time, Vaishnava sannyas was not much known. It was there, but it was not much known. And Mayavad sannyas was very well known and famous and prestigious. So Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas from a Mayavadi sannyasi. Or I should say from someone initiated in the Mayavad Sampradaya. But that his sannyas guru, Keshava Bharati, was actually transformed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But superficially, he was in the Shankara line. It's just like nowadays, you know, I don't know how prestigious it really is, but say it's prestigious to have a PhD. Now, someone could get a degree within the Vedic system, you know, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Sarvabhauma. And actually, that degree means more than a PhD. But if your idea is to have a prestigious position in society, then you might get a PhD from, you know, Harvard or Cambridge. Even though, by and large, all the professors in those institutions are fools and rascals who simply speak nonsense. But one takes that PhD for the sake of the prestige, so people will respect the person and listen to him. So in the same way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he wanted, for the sake of the fallen souls, he wanted to be respected for their benefit. So he took sannyas in the most prestigious sampradaya at the time, which was the Shankara sampradaya. Yes, certainly one may be influenced by impersonal ideas, by previous association, but if one associates with pure devotees and chants the holy name and renders service, one can become freed from those misconceptions. I mean, some people are impersonalists because that's sort of what they meet along the way. They're inquisitive or may even be seeking for the absolute truth, and then they meet impersonalists, and that's what they hear and that's what they know. But they're more ignorant. They're not really envious of Krishna. But some Mayavadis are envious of Krishna. I mean, at the Ardha Kumbh Mela, the first Kumbh Mela we went to with Srila Prabhupada in Allahabad, I met some very envious Mayavadis. And we had a book table at the front of the pandal, and some of them came up, these like sadhus, dressed as sadhus, they're just envious. Why Krishna? Why not this? Why not that? Ultimately, why not me? But then there are others, they're sort of innocent. They've been searching, they met some Mayavadi, heard some impersonal speculation, and sort of bought into it, but, you know, they're not really that knowledgeable or that determined to pursue that course. And many devotees who are with us today had some sort of impersonal influences in their lives before they met devotees.
Faith in the spiritual master, it seems to be a very important aspect of what Prabhupada's mentioning here.
Implicit.
Thank you. Implicit faith. And my question has to do with when you say examples for like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I'm finished with Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Bhagavad, it's just amazing what you accomplish. And when we hear from you and see the accomplishments of Srila Prabhupada, it's just astonishing. And so, in that, you know, in the light of those examples, it's very easy to just place yourself completely in that, you know, mood of surrender, full surrender. But when we're dealing with examples of pure devotees, but they seem to be very ordinary in terms of, I wouldn't say very ordinary, but they seem to be more ordinary. You know, like another temple devotee, in one sense. Then, you know, what is it that, what is that quality, what is that purpose that allows us to have that intrinsic faith? You know, what should we be looking? Because, you know, there are some astonishing examples of amazing examples, but, you know, there are other examples, and I'm afraid, you know, of not having that intrinsic, that implicit faith. So I'm wondering, what is it that we should really be looking deeply at when we're considering, you know, on that act of full surrender? What is it that inspires that, you know, beyond perhaps of some achievements?
Having implicit faith means, you know, firm faith in the orders of the spiritual master means that one will follow the orders, or attempt to follow the orders. Now, as you rightly said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is like world acharya, was a spiritual revolutionary. Srila Prabhupada was world acharya, spiritual revolutionary. We haven't been given that specific assignment. You know, as Srila Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Goswami, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate to keep the institution together. So, yes, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur formed something that didn't exist. And Srila Prabhupada also formed something that didn't exist. But we haven't been asked to do that. We've been asked to preserve something that does exist. So the manifestation of our implicit faith and the instructions of our spiritual master will not take the form of our going out and creating something new, but it will take the form of our preserving and embellishing something that is already there. Like Srila Prabhupada said, I've given you the framework, now you fill it in. If we think erroneously that we know better than Srila Prabhupada and we want to dismantle the framework and erect a new framework, that would be a disaster. We keep the framework, but we embellish it.
Yeah.
So, when Lord Chaitanya manifested this beautiful effulgence to attract the mind bodies, in a sense, and this, I'm not sure if the question is exactly justified because it's the Lord Himself and it's in a different situation, but when reaching out to the yoga community, should we, in a sense, of course the holy name is all attractive, and Krishna is all attractive, but do we perhaps, and not alter, but do we perceive ourselves through appearance easier or easily approachable to their community, and adjusting maybe even the type of bhajans that we sing, or the type of preaching styles that would be more attractive to that community? I mean, do we go in tilak and saris, or do we maybe dress in something that's a little bit more approachable for the yoga community that would perhaps be sort of different from their point of view?
Well, this is not a philosophical question exactly, and it is a controversial point. Some ISKCON leaders believe strongly that we have enough material in the songs of our Vaishnavacharyas that we don't need to sing anything else. And there are others who feel, well, you know, to make them feel that you're like one of them, you know, we might sing something about Ram or Shiva or Ganesh. So it's a little controversial point. I personally can't adjust very well to the idea of chanting Shiva or Ganesh, and but it's not exactly a philosophical question. For them to get the benefit of the chanting, they should chant without offense. And one of the offenses is to consider the names of demigods, like Lord Shiva, to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. So that could create an obstacle in their benefiting from hearing the chanting or joining the chanting if they think that all the names, you know, that are the same. Which usually means that they think that ultimately the Absolute is impersonal and you can call him Krishna or Rama or Shiva or Durga or It doesn't matter because ultimately he's impersonal. So that's an offense. And that will create an obstacle to people's getting the benefit of the chanting that we're exposing them to.
We could talk about, during your talk, about the importance of finding the spiritual master. So I've been wondering how, when Lord Chaitanya takes one body, sannyasi guru, how can he follow him when he's a Vaishnava? And obviously he's speaking, against my bodies.
Well, Srila Prabhupada said, in a way, sannyas is a formality. So Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master was Ishwara Puri, the highest Vaishnav. And his sannyas guru wasn't his spiritual master in that sense, but as a formality, he took sannyas from him. But in that process, he converted Keshava Bharati into a Vaishnava. So, but that's also an interesting point that Sri Prahlad Das told me that he did some historical research about Prakashananda Saraswati, because as we read here, he and his 10,000 followers became Vaishnavas. And in poring over the historical records and documents from that period, he found that it happened. That Prakashananda Saraswati Thakur did become a Vaishnav personally, but he didn't leave the Shankara Sampradaya. He stayed in the Shankara Sampradaya as a matter of respect, but personally, he was a Vaishnava, and his followers were Vaishnavas. And sometimes it happens that we might meet a spiritual leader in another tradition, and the person may be convinced about Krishna consciousness and actually become a devotee. But he may not give up his position. Like it happened, I don't really know what happened in the long run, because I was only in Nigeria for about a month. But I think I was the first devotee from ISKCON to go to Nigeria. And I met an African preacher. He had his following. And we met him, we preached to him, he chanted, he took prasad, he heard the philosophy, and he wanted books, we gave him books. It seemed like he became a devotee. But we didn't suggest that he should give up being a Christian preacher. The leader of his community. Just like sometimes you say, you can remain in your position but become Krishna conscious. So it seems, in a way it seems odd that if you become Krishna conscious you remain a Christian, or a Muslim, but isn't that what Prabhupada said? That you just add this and you'll become a better Hindu or a better Christian or a better Muslim? So, according to Sri Prahlad's research, Prakashananda Saraswati, he actually became a Vaishnava. Personally, he became a Vaishnava. But he still kept his position in the Shankara Sampradaya. And Keshava Bharati, he also became a Vaishnava by Mahaprabhu's association. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master was Ishvara Puri, not Keshava Bharati, although he took sannyas from him. I mean, I say I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I took sannyas from Tamal Krishna Goswami. But Tamal Krishna Goswami is in the same line as Srila Prabhupada, so, you know, I accept him as a Shiksha Guru. For me, it's not just a formality, but it could be a formality depending on the circumstances.
Sometimes in our conditioned state, we tend to. Love is. We think that love is to, like we were just talking recently about, being appreciated. People to appreciate me means that they care about me. To show me appreciation means that they care. That's maybe a mundane conception. But I don't know, is that a mundane conception to want to be appreciated by others? Is that an art?
No, it's sort of natural to want to be appreciated, because we're not. I think it's natural, but we shouldn't give up our service if we're not appreciated. It's like so many things. We do our duty as a matter of duty. Now, we may want something along with it, and according to Krishna's will or whatever, we may get it or we may not get it, but we still continue with our duty.
And if I see that someone else is doing something really nice, they're doing a nice service, and I can extend myself out towards them and show them appreciation. Because in our philosophy, one of the points is that we hear he praises me as my own. So sometimes we may not see appreciation of devotees as a positive thing, but ultimately we may see it as a negative thing because of that philosophical point. And what could result from that is that relationships with devotees become, they lose inspiration, or it becomes, you know, distraught over certain things because they're not getting, you know, these things that they need, the appreciation or whatever. So if I recognize that a person could use a little pat on the back once in a while, is it okay to do that? I mean, obviously, I think it is okay, but It just seems like we don't do enough of that. And maybe that's just coming from me. I don't get enough pat on the back. Maybe that's what I'm saying.
You definitely don't get enough. You definitely deserve much more. Well, you know, we're meant to appreciate other devotees. And it's natural if you appreciate another devotee that you would express your appreciation. It's not that someone who praises you is your enemy. It's the mind that is our enemy or friend. So if a devotee offers genuine appreciation, then, you know, in a humble mood, you can take it as an encouragement that, I'm not really what that devotee thinks I am or says I am, but it gives me encouragement that I should try to come to be what that devotee thinks I am or said I am. Or we might think that, well, yes, but it wasn't really me. It was my guru and the Vaishnavas or Krishna who did it. And they're giving me the credit. But I would say it's very healthy to think favorably and speak favorably about devotees. It's very purifying. It's very purifying. It's like at that same Ardha Kumbh Mela, somebody came into Prabhupada's tent and said, you know, what if, the usual argument, what if everyone became Krishna conscious, how would the world go on? And Prabhupada said, that's not the problem, that too many people will become Krishna conscious. The problem is that not enough people will become Krishna conscious. He said it's like saying, what if everyone becomes rich? Who will be the chauffeur? I mean, nobody's going to stop trying to become rich because they're worried, you know, if I become rich, who's going to be the chauffeur? So I don't think in the general climate that we need to worry about too much appreciation of devotees. I think it's more like it's a bigger concern that there's not enough appreciation of devotees. But Krishna sent Priyottama as a to express his love and appreciation to. He's going from one to the other, just giving love and affection and appreciation on behalf of Krishna. Once His Holiness Bhakti Vigyan Swami, who's like the main preacher in Russia. I mean, he's an excellent devotee and a brilliant thinker and speaker. And he was getting a lot of recognition and praise. And, you know, he wasn't sure how to deal with it, so He asked His Holiness Radhanath Swami, and Radhanath Swami replied, just don't take it seriously. It's like if someone says something bad about you, your friends, oh, don't take it seriously. You know, it's more about the other person, it's not about you. You know, don't take it seriously, don't take it personally. So same thing, if someone praises you, and if it's a danger that you get puffed up, just don't take it serious. It's not you. You know, the praise doesn't really go to you, and the blame doesn't go to you. It's just, you have nothing to do with any of it. Your spirit, soul, and you have nothing to, it's just happening. Sort of on that level, but on the more human level, I think, you know, because Kali Yuga is so bad, there's so much discouragement everywhere, you know. And we need to praise devotees. It's purifying for us to praise devotees. I've heard in some communities, actually I heard in Hong Kong, but I've heard similar things in other places, but I heard that in Hong Kong, every month, all the devotees get together, and, or maybe it's the leaders, or all the devotees, but anyway, they get together. And everyone in the room praises someone else in the room. And you can't praise, I mean, the same person can't be praised twice. So everyone will get appreciated by someone. And everyone brings a gift. And, you know, the maximum value of the gift is like a dollar, or, you know, maybe $5 at the most, I think, maybe. So it's not like the sort of monetary value of the gift, but it's just as a token of, you know, appreciation, affection, an exchange of love. And it creates a very good atmosphere among the devotees. So, and when I was studying psychology, I was told of an experiment in high school, I mean, performed on high school students, where the student, each student was supposed to choose the student, the other student who he or she most hated or disliked. And then for 1 month, they were supposed to be very nice to the person they hated. And at the end of the month, they all ended up liking the person that they used to dislike. So, I think from every point of view, it's beneficial to express appreciation for devotees.
Extend myself out, and if I don't take those steps to show appreciation for the other devotees, is that due to the impersonalism that I've been conditioned to? that I'm afraid to interact with another person. Is that another form of impersonalism?
It could be. It could be. Because of impersonalism, we're afraid of personal interactions and relationships. But not necessarily, but it could be. But I mean, the main thing is the heart, really. I mean, because praise, you know, that can also be tricky. It's like, well, I mean, it's not really a problem, but like someone does something nice and you appreciate them. They do it nice, you appreciate them. You do it nice, you appreciate them. They do it nice, you appreciate them. Then once you don't appreciate them, then they say, oh no, I didn't do it nice. I'm a failure. He doesn't, you know, it's like, so it's good for us to express appreciation and affection, but the person who receives it shouldn't be overly dependent on that type of encouragement. But the encouragement should really come more from within, from the internal satisfaction that one gets from knowing one is serving Guru and Krishna. Because we are in the world of duality, there's always going to be pleasure and pain, praise and blame. Prabhupada received a lot of discouragement from his god brothers and others, had a lot of opposition, but he, you know, he wasn't doing what he was doing for the sake of getting praise or avoiding blame. He was doing it to serve his Guru Maharaj. It bothered him. You can see. I mean, I was listening to his sort of informal talks with disciples in the last year or so in Vrindavan. I mean, it bothered him that people were not appreciating Krishna consciousness. Not him, but they weren't appreciating Krishna consciousness. But he kept going. He never stopped. And he was certainly experiencing an internal reciprocation. Yes, Gopal?
And just also on the same vein, you mentioned that you know, there's a couple of different ways to accept you know, praise, like with the understanding that, you know, you're really not, this isn't what you're doing to begin with, or that you know, you're just unbounded to speak of. I mean, you're just being nice in some way. But sometimes, you know, and I'm sure a lot of devotees get, you know, unlimited amounts of praise for so many activities on a daily basis. It seems like it would be very, I'm sure it has to be difficult to externally accept the praise and internally understand your humble position, with the concern that the person or persons hearing the praise may see your acceptance of that praise externally as not very humble. I mean, I guess that is a difficulty to accept praise for a devotee, to accept praise that, you know, they don't feel deserved, but somehow you have to, you know, in that exchange, accept that praise. So is there any, I've just kind of wondered how a devotee is, does he just have to accept how the person giving praise or the people hearing the praise, how they will perceive him, regardless of what he feels in his heart? They just have to accept it, or they may feel
no.
My arrogance or feel that I'm
I mean, a devotee should be intelligent, and you know, it's a decision that a preacher makes how to deal with any offering. Like, we arranged a very, glamorous program for Srila Prabhupada at Birla House in Bombay. The Birlas were the richest family in India then, still very wealthy. And it was arranged that after the program, Prabhupada would have dinner. And after the kirtan and talk and Arti, Mrs. Birla approached Srila Prabhupada, you know, please come and have prasad. And Prabhupada said, no. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? And she said, please come, please come. And he's saying, no. And then ultimately he sat down and took prasad. So it was sort of the, I don't know if you want to say etiquette, but like, it's just sort of like that you know, you don't want the other person to think like you're greedy for their food. And then the other person doesn't want you to think that they're just inviting you as a formality, but that they really mean it and they really want you to take it. So things do not... So if someone offers you something, you have to do something with it. You know, it may be, say someone offers you Lakshmi. Well, now, if you accept it, is the person going to think that you're greedy? It is a consideration, and you might not want to accept it if you have that apprehension that they'll think you're greedy. But even if they give you something and you do accept it, you feel like they genuinely want to serve you because they have faith that you'll use it in Krishna's service, then you can accept it and then you use it in Krishna's service. Or if you think there's some doubt, you say, well, you know, don't give it to me, you know, put it in the deity's box or give it to the temple president or whatever. And the same thing with praise. It's good, in a sense, that they're praising a devotee. So either, you know, accept it, apparently, but internally pass it on, or you externally pass it on. But nothing belongs to you. I had a very vivid experience at the, they called it the Srila Prabhupada Holy Name Festival in the Philippines. That is Holiness Giridhari Swami arranged. So we're having Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada. And someone was coming around with a big tray of flowers. You know, nice flowers. And on that tray was like a big, one big lotus flower. And so the person who was distributing the flowers gave me the big lotus flower. And for a moment, like I got all excited, wow, I got the lotus flower. But the next moment, it was at Prabhupada's lotus feet with all the other flowers. So I was thinking, you know, like, why get excited that I got the lotus flower to offer? You know, it's in my hand for like 3 seconds, and then it's at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So it's like that with everything. Whatever we get, I mean, we might get excited, we got it, but what is the meaning? It's not going to stay with us. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.